The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Dan Friedel. This program is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jill Robbins reports on China's population loss. Dan Novak has a story on an artificial intelligence system that schools may try to prevent students from using. Later, we present the next part in our American History series. But first,
China's population dropped last year for the first time in 60 years. The turn is expected to start a long decrease in China's population, placing pressure on the country's and the world's economy. China's National Bureau of Statistics reported a drop of about 850,000 people for a population of 1.4 billion in 2022. The drop is the first decrease since 1961. The last year of China's Great Famine. That possibly makes India the world's most populous nation. United Nations experts predicted last year that India would have a population of 1.4 billion in 2022. They also estimated that China's population will decrease by 109 million by 2050. Though they did not expect the South Asian nation to overtake China until this year. Some experts believe China's population has been dropping for a few years. The recent numbers represent a big change in a country that once sought to control population growth through a one-child policy. Many wealthy countries, including Japan and South Korea, are struggling to deal with an aging workforce, which could slow their economies. But experts say a population decrease will be even more difficult to deal with in a developing economy like China's. Yi Fuxian is an expert on Chinese population trends at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. Yi said, "China has become older before it has become rich." He added that China's shrinking labor force and the expected downturn in manufacturing would add to high prices and high inflation in the United States and Europe. Zhou Wei Zhang is chief economist at Pinpoint Asset Management. He told Reuters, "Economic growth will have to depend more on productivity growth." But Kang Yi, head of China's National Bureau of Statistics, dismissed concerns about the population decrease. Kang told reporters that overall labor supply still exceeds demand. The Bureau said the working age population, between 16 and 59 years old, was 875.56 million. About 62% of the national population. Those aged 65 and older totaled 209.78 million, about 14% of the total population. The population numbers do not include Hong Kong, Macau, or foreign residents. Stuart Gittel-Baston is a professor of social science at Khalifa University in Abu Dhabi. He told the Associated Press that if handled correctly, a decreasing population does not necessarily lead to a weaker economy. "It's a big psychological issue, probably the biggest," Gittel-Baston said. In 2022, the Bureau reported 9.56 million births with 10.41 million deaths. Last year, China's reported birth rate was just 6.2 1.77 births per 1,000 people. The number is down from a rate of 7.52 births in 2021, and marks China's lowest birth rate on record. Officials also reported that the number of Chinese women of childbearing age, which the government defines as aged 25 to 35, fell by about 4 million. The death rate, the highest since 1974, during the Cultural Revolution, was 7.37 deaths per 1,000 people. In 2021, the rate was 7.18 deaths. It was not immediately clear if the numbers were affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. China has been accused by some experts of underreporting deaths from the virus by blaming them on other conditions. Much of the population loss is believed to be the result of China's one-child policy established between 1980 and 2015. Since then, China has urged families to have more children without success. The high cost of education and living causes many families to have no more than one child and often no children at all. The one-child policy and a traditional preference for boys have also created an imbalance in men and women. The latest data shows China with around 722 million males compared to 690 million females. The latest data was the top issue on Chinese social media on Tuesday with millions of followers. A person with the username Joyful Ned wrote, "The fundamental reason why women do not want to have children lies not in themselves, but in the failure of society and men to take up the responsibility of raising children." I'm Jill Robbins.
Ask the new artificial intelligence, or AI tool, ChatGPT, to write about the cause of the American Civil War, and you can watch it produce a school report in just a few seconds. The technology is so good that it can write sentences like ones written by a human. And it is also free. The tool has been in use since November. But it is already raising tough questions about the future of AI in education, the tech industry, and a number of professions. New York City school officials recently started blocking the writing tool on school devices and networks. The decision by the largest school system in the United States could affect how other school systems deal with the technology. Teachers are now trying to find out how to prevent students using the AI tool for cheating. And the creators of ChatGPT also say they are looking for ways to detect misuse. ChatGPT launched last November as part of a larger set of technologies developed by the San Francisco-based company OpenAI. It is part of a new generation of AI systems that can have a discussion and create written work. It can even produce new images and video based on what it has learned from a large database of digital books, online writings, and other media. But unlike previous AI tools known as large language models, ChatGPT is available for free to anyone on the internet. It is also designed to be more user-friendly. It works like a written conversation between the AI system and the person asking it questions. Millions of people have played with the tool over the past month. They used it to write poems or songs. Some tried to trick it into making mistakes. Others used it to write email. All of those requests are helping it to get smarter. Like similar systems, ChatGPT can produce strong writing. But that does not mean what it says is factual or makes sense. Its launch came with little guidance for how to use it. But the program will admit when it is wrong. It will also question incorrect premises and reject requests meant to bring about offensive answers. Its popularity has led its creators to try to lower some people's expectations. Sam Altman is the head of OpenAI. He said on Twitter in December that ChatGPT is very limited, but good enough at some things to make people think it is great. He added that it should not be used for anything important right now. Many school systems in the U.S. are still deciding how to set policies on the use of AI programs and how they can be used. The New York City Education Department said it is restricting use of ChatGPT because it is worried about negative impacts on student learning, as well as concerns regarding the safety and accuracy of content. But there is no stopping a student from using ChatGPT from home or on a personal device. Jenna Lyle is a spokesperson for New York schools. She said the tool may be able to provide quick and easy answers to questions. But she told the Associated Press, "It does not build critical thinking and problem-solving skills, which are essential for academic and lifelong success." When VOA asked ChatGPT whether the program could be used to write school papers, it said that using it for writing papers is cheating and does not help the students. ChatGPT then provided a very similar answer to Lyle's, saying, "Using such a tool doesn't build critical thinking and problem-solving skills, which are essential for academic and lifelong success." The Associated Press asked ChatGPT how to know if something was written by a human or AI. The program said, "To determine if something was written by a human or AI, you can look for the absence of personal experiences or emotions." It noted that AI writings could also contain unnecessary words or repeated sentences. In a human-written statement, OpenAI told the AP that it plans to work with educators as it learns how people are experimenting with ChatGPT in the real world. "We don't want ChatGPT to be used for misleading purposes in schools or anywhere else. So we're already developing mitigations to help anyone identify text generated by that system," the company said. I'm Dan Novak.
You just heard Dan Novak present this week's Education Report.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Something interesting happened when you asked the ChatGPT system a question. Can you explain a little more to our listeners about how ChatGPT responded?
Sure. I asked ChatGPT whether students should use it to write school papers. The system's response was almost the same as a response given to the Associated Press by Jenna Lyle, who is a spokesperson for New York schools. The AP asked her a similar question. ChatGPT copied her response, saying that using the system to write school papers wouldn't build critical thinking or problem-solving skills. It used the exact words said by Lyle.
Why do you think that happened?
Since I wrote this story after the AP story was published online, ChatGPT probably used her response to form an answer. The system uses online books and articles to learn and get smarter and form responses to questions. I think the system's response gives some interesting insight into how ChatGPT works.
And it may also serve as a warning for students who want to use ChatGPT for their essays.
I think you're right, Dan. In addition to being just plain cheating, if a student wanted to use ChatGPT to write their essays, it's possible the system may be plagiarizing from somewhere else, and the student using ChatGPT would have no idea. To plagiarize means to take the work of someone else and pass it off as your own. It's a big no-no in school.
Sounds like students need to be careful if they want to use ChatGPT as a resource. Thanks for answering my questions, Dan.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Abraham Lincoln did not live to see the final surrender of the armies of the Confederacy. A Confederate sympathizer shot the president at Ford's Theater in Washington on April 14, 1865. By that time, however, the American Civil War really was over. General Robert E. Lee surrendered in early April, bringing an end to 4 years of fighting. Several other Confederate armies were still in the field, but they were too small and too weak to continue the fight. Morris Joyce and Leo Scully tell the story of the final surrender of the Confederate armies.
One army was in North Carolina, commanded by General Joe Johnston. 5 days after Lee's surrender, Johnston asked for a meeting with General William Sherman, the commander of Union forces in North Carolina. Sherman met with Johnston a few days later. He offered him the same surrender terms that General Lee had accepted. He said the Confederates must give up their weapons and promise to fight no more. Then they would be free to return to their homes. Johnston said he could not accept these terms. Johnston said he had the power to surrender all the Confederate armies everywhere in the South. He said he would do so if Sherman agreed on a political settlement.
The two generals met again the next day. Sherman listened as Johnston explained his demands. Most of them Sherman accepted. He believed that President Lincoln wanted to help the South as much as possible. He had heard Lincoln say that he wanted to make it easy for the Southern states to return to the Union. When the agreement was completed, Sherman sent it immediately to Washington for approval by the new president, Andrew Johnson. The agreement seemed to give the South everything it wanted.
Instead of surrendering to Sherman, the Confederate armies would break up. The soldiers would return to their homes, taking their weapons with them. They would sign a promise not to fight again and to obey state and federal laws. In exchange for this, Sherman said the president would recognize state governments in the South which promised to support the Constitution. He said federal courts would be established in the South again. And he said the president, as well as he could, would protect the political rights promised to all people by the Constitution of the United States and the state constitutions. And Sherman said the United States government would not interfere with any of the Southern people if they remained peaceful and obeyed the laws.
President Johnson held a cabinet meeting to discuss the agreement Sherman had signed. War Secretary Stanton and the other members of the cabinet were violently opposed to it. They said Sherman had no power to make any kind of political settlement. President Johnson rejected the agreement. He said Johnston's army must surrender within 48 hours or be destroyed. He said the surrender terms could be no better than those given General Lee.
Johnston decided to surrender. On April 26th, his army laid down its weapons. One by one, the remaining armies surrendered. The soldiers began returning home. Many of them were bitter. They wanted to continue to fight. They spoke of guerrilla war against the Yankees. But most of the Confederate commanders opposed this. Many, like Cavalry General Nathan Bedford Forrest, urged their men to accept defeat. Said Forrest, in a farewell speech to his men, "It is a clear fact that we are beaten. We would be foolish to try to fight further. The government which we tried to establish is at an end. Civil war, such as you have just passed through, naturally causes feelings of bitterness and hatred. We must put these feelings aside. Whatever your responsibilities may be, meet them like men. You have been good soldiers. You can be good citizens."
Confederate President Jefferson Davis fled south after the fall of his government. He hoped to get across the Mississippi River. He believed that he could form a new Confederate army. If this failed, he planned to escape to Mexico. President Lincoln had hoped that Davis would escape. He felt that punishing Davis would only create more bitterness and make Reconstruction, the rebuilding of the South, more difficult. But President Johnson did not share Lincoln's feelings. He believed Davis had a part in the plot to kill Lincoln. He said, "Davis must be captured." On May 10th, Union forces found the Confederate president's camp in southern Georgia. They seized him and took him to Fort Monroe, Virginia. He remained there for many months under close guard. His trial was never held, and finally, in 1867, he was freed.
Late in May, 150,000 Union soldiers, representing every one of the Union armies, came to Washington. They came to take part in a big parade, a victory march through the city. For 2 days, the soldiers marched past the White House. Many of the marching men had fought at Bull Run, at Fredericksburg, Antietam, Gettysburg, Petersburg, and Appomattox. Sherman's Western Army was there from battles at Shiloh, Vicksburg, Murfreesboro, Chickamauga, and Atlanta. The soldiers marched proudly past the president and other government leaders.
along the way, from the Capitol building to the White House, were huge crowds of cheering people. Hour after hour, the soldiers passed. Never had the city seen such a celebration. Each group of soldiers had its band and carried its own battle flags. Some proudly carried flags that had been torn in fierce fighting. Finally, late on the second day, the final group of soldiers passed the White House. The grand parade was over. The battle flags were put away, and the marching bands fell silent. The war was ended. Now, men could look about them and count the cost of the war.
4 years of bloody fighting had saved the Union of States. The Northern victory had settled for all time the question of whether states could leave the Union. And it had put to rest the great problem of slavery, which had troubled the nation for so many years. But the costs were great. More than 600,000 men of the North and South lost their lives. Hundreds of thousands more were wounded. Many had lost their arms or legs.
The war cost the North almost $3,500,000,000. It was almost as costly to the Confederates. Most of the war was fought in the southern states, and most of the war damage was there. Hundreds of cities and towns suffered damage. Some, like Atlanta, were completely destroyed by Union forces. The damage outside the populated areas was almost as great. Union armies had marched across the South, leaving behind them widespread destruction. Farmhouses and buildings had been burned, animals and crops seized or destroyed.
Transport in the South was especially hard hit. Union soldiers had destroyed most of the railroads. The few Confederate trains that escaped capture were worn out from heavy use. Riverboats had been destroyed, and roads and bridges were in terrible condition. The South had no money to rebuild. Businessmen and rich landowners had put their money in Confederate bonds, now completely worthless. Confederate war debts would never be paid. There was also the question of the 4 million former slaves. They were free now, but few could take care of themselves. They needed jobs and training.
The people of the South faced a difficult future. They had been defeated in battle. Their economy was destroyed. In many areas, there was little food, and the people were hungry. Farmers could not plant crops because they had no seed and no animals to break the ground. There was no money for rebuilding. To add to all these problems, radical Republicans in Washington were demanding severe punishment for the South. Instead of offering aid, they demanded that the government sell the property of Southerners to pay Union war debts.
President Andrew Johnson, himself a Southerner from Tennessee, opposed the radical plans. He had his own program of reconstruction for the South.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Dan Friedel.